The light was regulated from the cabinet, and was sufficient for us to see one another's features at a distance of 6 feet, and to read a watch with a white face. The lower part of the curtains of the cabinet were drawn back to the side, and a cloth was secured across the lower half of the cabinet. In front of this, on 3 chairs, sat, from left to right, Mr. Z, the relative, whom I will here call Mrs. M, and Johnson, holding hands. When they had settled themselves, a sheet was tied over them up to their necks, so that their faces only were in view. Opposite to the 3 persons thus sitting on chairs, outside the cabinet, and at a distance of 3 feet from them, were 3 chairs occupied by Mrs. Z, myself, and Mrs. Johnson. Thus, Mrs. Z was sitting directly opposite to Mr. Z, I was sitting opposite to Mrs. M, and Mrs. Johnson was facing her husband. First, a pair of hands of delicate shape appeared over the heads of Mr. Z and Mrs. M. Then, at various times, single hands appeared, one small and delicate, the other larger, and no less delicate. The latter had a ring on one of the fingers. A hand manifested 20 times or more, several times over Mr. Z, and at least 4 times stroking the right side of his face, that is, the furthest possible point from the medium whose right hand was held by Mrs. M. I rose from my chair, and took both Johnson's hands in my right hand, stretching out my left hand. I was touched by a visible spirit hand that showed over the head of Mrs. M. 2 notes were thrown out of the cabinet, one from a spirit guide of Mrs. Z, and one from a spirit child of Mrs. M. The 2 hands appeared simultaneously 4 or 5 times. A graphophone, the mouth of which showed beyond the right side of the cabinet, played several times. The starting lever could not have been reached by the disengaged hand of the medium. I threw my handkerchief into the cabinet, between Mr. Z and Mrs. M. In a few seconds it was thrown out to me, with hard knots in 3 of the corners. This also happened to Mrs. Z. Mrs. Johnson was sitting by my side all the time, and had no part in the performance. Johnson was in partial trance. About an hour after we had sat down, this part of the séance came to an end. The lights were lit, and the windows opened for 10 minutes to let in some air to revive Johnson, who was somewhat distressed. We then formed a circle in the middle of the room, with a trumpet in the center. Johnson became fully controlled by Grey Ether, an Indian, who spoke in a different voice from that of the medium. Vibrations were maintained by a small musical box under the control of Mrs. Johnson. During the sitting, this box was carried round over the heads of all the sitters, playing meanwhile a definite tune. We sat now in darkness, we did not touch hands. Whispers were heard talking through the trumpet to the different sitters. One spirit came to me, but I was not sure of the identity. After a conversation had been going on for a minute or a minute and a half with a sitter, the trumpet would be dropped on the floor. By the sound, I should judge it fell several times 4 or 5 feet. One spirit known as Kitty spoke in the direct voice, without the assistance of the trumpet. The last manifestation was that of a spirit who had been in life a locomotive engineer, and who was drowned in Lake Superior. He spoke clearly through the trumpet, and announced his arrival and departure by making noises through it indicative of the first starting of an engine, puff, 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 and so on. When he left, the spirit imitated, not only the starting, but the sounds of an engine gathering speed and eventually disappearing in the distance. It was very effective, considering the atmospheric conditions, and that there was one perfect stranger in the circle, myself. I thought the display of spirit power on this evening was very successful. I will now proceed to describe other seances at which I attended when the Johnsons were the mediums. They were all held in the room described above. January 6, 1909. Atmospheric conditions very good. The temperature of the air was about 10 degrees, and it was dry and clear. Time, 2 to 4 p.m. The sitters were the same as on the previous occasion, with another relative of Mr. Z. added, whom I will here call Mrs. J., making a circle of 3 ladies and 2 men, all experienced investigators. Mr. Z. and I examined the cabinet, then we took our seats about 4 feet in front of it. The room was darkened for 4 or 5 minutes, during which time a spirit form within the cabinet called out, "How are you, Uncle Zed, and Zed, and M, and J, and Uncle William Usborne Moore?" The mediums knew my name was Moore, and may possibly have known it was William, but they certainly had no means of finding out my second Christian name. In the hotel book I had signed W. Moore. I may here remark that W. Moore is a very common name in the United States, something like John Smith in this country. Johnson sat in a chair, one foot outside and in front of the left end of the cabinet. He was immediately controlled by Gray Ether, the Indian. There was a shade over the small oil lamp behind us. This was drawn up a little, and the seance commenced. The light in the room being sufficient for anyone with good sight to read the time by a white-faced watch. 57. Within 2 minutes the figure of a woman, below medium height, dressed in a white robe with girdle round the waist, sprang up from the floor very close to the medium, holding out her hands in my direction. I got up and went up close to the medium. From the building and proportions I was able to guess who this was. She tried to speak, but all I could catch was "al" or "all." But, unfortunately, owing to our mutual anxiety, I presume, she dematerialized into the carpet before I could clearly distinguish the features. This same materialization and dematerialization occurred a second time with no more success. After a third abortive attempt she did not dematerialize into the floor, but simply faded away. Not long after this two strong forms emerged from the opening of the cabinet on my right. I was almost touching the entrance medium with my left arm. Within 2 feet of me, on my right, was a woman as tall as Johnson, wearing a white robe, a bright silver or steel band on her forehead, and what appeared to be bracelets and jewels on her arms. After a few words of conversation she let me understand that she was Cleopatra, once queen of Egypt. Standing a little behind her was a smaller form who gave the name of Josephine. In appearance neither of these was human in complexion or lines, but swarthy and dimpling, Josephine's face rather red. The general effect was not unpleasing, though it never occurred to me that either face was mortal. Asked Josephine who was the spirit that first appeared, and she corroborated my first impression. "It was Iola." Grafe the suddenly exclaimed, "I like that squaw." I said, "How flattered Cleopatra would have been, in Earth life, to hear that." Pound the Indian took this innocent remark in bad part, and called out angrily, "I say she nice squaw, I say it to her face." Grafe the not got four tongues. "No. No." Cleopatra then went up to Johnson and waved her arms over him, when peace was restored. Once Grafe the caused Johnson to stand up close alongside of two big spirits. The three forms all close together, and in full sight of us all, were impressive. On another occasion Greyfeather, controlling Johnson, walked over to my chair, a distance of 8 feet, and put his medium's left hand into my two hands. He then proceeded to give me a little advice in a loud voice, being apparently under the impression that I had never attended a seance before. "When spirit squaw come you know say, who are you? What your name?" You say, "How are you? Very glad to see you." Next time squaw come faps she give you her name. While he was thus talking the cabinet curtain opened, and a man went straight across to Mr. Zed, who recognized him as his deceased brother and returned to the cabinet with him. Including some repetitions, 15 or 16 materialized forms emerged from the cabinet and conversed with their friends, while Johnson was out of it. 6 or 8 came after Greyfeather had taken him inside. All these in addition to the familiar spirits, the habitués of the cabinet. One of the visitors was a nun, who had a very spiritual countenance and wore a bright silver cross about 4 inches long. She came specially for Mr. Zed. But, at the request of the latter lady, she walked well out into the light in order that I should be able to see her plainly. The effort was too much for her, and she doubled up, instead of gradually descending into the floor, which is the usual method of disappearance. Each member of the circle was visited by at least two friends who were recognized. 2 or 3 men came to me whom I was not able to identify properly, one making semaphore signs with his arms. One curious incident occurred while Johnson was still in view. Grafe the shouted out, "Go away, go back in box, Cabinet. Q. What is the matter, Greyfeather?
Greyfeather, me tell him, no.
Go back to box and come out there. He want to come into medium and turn me out.
Q. Who is it?
Greyfeather, he come for Mr. Moore. He say his name John Nicholson. I know one John Nicholson living and one who passed over some years ago. The former is a busy professional man who, I am sure, was not asleep in England at 9 p.m. The latter was a gentle, courteous, old canon of a cathedral in the west of England, and the last person in this world or the next to try and dispossess the Indian of the organism of Johnson. The only surmise I could make was that this was the intrepid leader of the attack on Delhi, whose memory I, in common with thousands of Englishmen, have held in veneration since the days of the mutiny. Our knowledge of his character does not exclude the idea that, if he wanted to communicate with one of his countrymen, he would not hesitate to turn anyone out of a body that appeared to him to suit his purpose. He had very often, though not recently, been in my thoughts. After Johnson had been in the cabinet half an hour, Greyfeather brought him out, and squatted him on the carpet tailor fashion. While he was sitting thus, a phantom slowly arose behind him, but soon faded away before it could be recognized. January 14, 1909. With the Johnsons, 2.30 to 4 p.m. This seance was a failure, but some interesting incidents occurred. Atmospheric conditions not of the best, it was thawing. Mrs. Johnson not at all well, Johnson in good form. About half an hour after the light was put out, Johnson, who at first had been possessed by Greyfeather, came partly out of trance. Greyfeather left, and an English blue jacket controlled the medium. He used shocking language, I regret to say, and when asked to depart by Mrs. Johnson in a very civil way, refused, saying, he had as much right to be there as we had. By and by, however, he was persuaded to get out of Johnson. Greyfeather resumed control, and took the medium inside the cabinet. From there he called to me, the chief from across the big pond, to come and sit with him in the cabinet, saying, I want to draw from him. I know draw from Squaw Johnson, she is not well tonight. I accordingly took my chair inside, and the following dialogue took place. 58, Greyfeather, I see you yesterday in another wigwam. You not get much there.
Admiral Moore,
oh yes, we did, Greyfeather. We had a good time, and Viola, Kitty, and Tim came to speak to us from here.
Greyfeather, ugh,
ugh. I see you with two other chiefs.
Q, well who are they?
A, I think one was Hislop.
Wrong,
I no want mention names.
Chief Yarian there.
Correct, you think I no see you.
I see you in morning go into a wigwam,
yes.
Big stone building, and get book, scratch paper.
Q, do you mean I wrote in a book?
A, ugh.
No, you read book,
correct.
Young squaw come to you and ask for wampum, money. You say, whoa,
whoa,
whoa.
Admiral Moore, that is a libel,
Greyfeather. I made no difficult 6y with the young woman. Now, what happened was this. The previous morning I had occasion to go to the public library in Toledo to return a book, and at the same time borrowed another, from which I copied an extract, scratch paper. The clerk returned me $2 paid as deposit the day before. The young woman said later, I must ask you for 25 cents.
What for?
I inquired.
Answer, we always charge 25 cents in addition to the deposit, in case of the book sustaining any injury.
I put down the quarter without demur, but I felt mildly indignant, as I considered the $2 deposit ought to cover all risks. The seance with the other psychic the previous afternoon will be alluded to later in this chapter. Soon after the above conversation I was dismissed from the cabinet, and Greyfeather said I came out. He tried sitting outside, with me beside him, but it was no good. He left Johnson with a violent jerk, always a bad sign, and the medium came slowly to himself. Greyfeather remarked, before leaving Johnson, I sick, no power, beating the medium's breast with heavy thumps, no wampum for my medium, but no good talk anymore, like a squaw. On my offering the usual fee, Johnson declined taking it, saying, we never accept anything when no forms appear.
The above incident is worthy of a few minutes' consideration. Mr. Yarian was with me on the previous day at the house of Mrs. Alexander, a new medium, but he had no intention of going 10 minutes before we started. It was quite an afterthought. He suddenly put off our business engagement to accompany me. He and I were unknown to the medium we sat with, and that same medium is unknown to Johnson. The name of my friend Dr. Hislop had been mentioned before the Johnson seance commenced. But, if Grafe even knew anything at all about my thoughts of that gentleman, he would have known that, if no other investigator were available in the United States, I would not sit in his company at a seance, for reasons wholly impersonal. In all essentials, the story of what happened in the public library is quite true. Not only did Grafe either, apparently, see what took place, but could read my thoughts when the quarter dollar was demanded. The following explanations may occur to those who read this. The medium of the previous afternoon and the clerk at the library told the Johnsons of the various incidents. B. Johnson dogged me all day. C. Grafe either read my subconscious mind. D. My guide was with me throughout, and told Grafe that the facts, as a test, no other phenomena being available. E. Grafe there followed me about, and was aware of every action and thought. Replies: this is so intrinsically improbable as to need no denial. B. Had this been so, surely I should have seen him in the room of the library. In his normal state he could not read my thoughts. C. If this were so, Grafe there would have been more accurate in his statement about my companions. D. I cannot be sure, but I think this is the most reasonable explanation. E. Here, again, is a striking improbability. Grafe there is well acquainted with the seconded gentleman, who did accompany me on the previous afternoon, and whom, in his talk, he misnamed Dr. Hislop. The controls of Johnson's cabinet do follow the sitters about the country and meet them at other seances, making themselves known by speech, but we were not aware of Grafe there's presence at the other medium's house on the previous day. Had he been present, he would not have made the mistake in the names. My guide, Iola, saw and heard everything at the seance of the previous afternoon. She was much in evidence. She was most probably in the library with me in the morning, and, when she came to the Johnsons, told Grafe there all about it, to assist him to give a test, not having sufficient strength herself to use the direct voice. This particular materialization seance at Johnson's was a complete failure. January 16, 1909. With the Johnsons. 2.15 to 4.15 p.m. Circle composed of the same sitters as on the 14th. Atmospheric conditions not good. It was snowing heavily most of the time, and there were 6 inches of snow on the pavements before we got to the house. In some respects this seance was better than that of January 6th, for more forms appeared, but I did not like it so much, as the light allowed by the spirits in the cabinet was much less, no doubt on account of the inferior conditions. About 25 separate personalities manifested, counting the repetitions. There were over 40 materializations or etherealizations. For my part, I only saw the faces of two clearly enough for recognition. These were Viola and Edna, the nun. Viola is a very lively girl of 18 or 19, with long streaming hair. She touched my hand with hers. Edna came out 4 or 5 times, and gave me opportunities to see her face, dress, and cross quite plainly. Iola brought my father and mother. On one occasion I went to the entrance of the cabinet, and saw two forms together, which I soon discovered were my parents, and the small form of Iola behind them Cleopatra manifested. This afternoon she was about 5 feet 9 inches in height, and not so big as on the first occasion. She clearly said that she was the Egyptian queen, and was glad to come to me, and that she intended to accompany me west. Around her forehead was the same silver band or crown, and she had the same majestic mien. One word of explanation here. I consulted with my friends in this small private circle as to their interpretation of the term identification. "Do you mean," I asked, "that you recognize your friends every time by their features?" The reply, in effect, was no, we identify them by their general appearance. We cannot always see the face distinctly enough to be able to say that it is our friend. We sometimes see the features, but not every time. Each spirit form has its own individual actions of arms and hands. Some put their hands above their heads, some cross their arms, others have a particular dress. Once assumed, those idiosyncrasies are exhibited on every occasion that they appear, but the forms vary in height according to conditions. Mr. Yarian, upon whose experience I place great value, though I never sat with him at the Johnsons, attached large importance to this. He said, "The forms that manifest to a sitter each have a particular gait and movement of the limbs. If the conditions are not good, you may not see features plainly enough to identify your friend by looking on his or her face, but you know them by their distinctive movements, dress, and carriage. Is it conceivable that Johnson can produce enough confederates to imitate these features at every séance? Hundreds of people sit with him in a year. Think what an organization this would mean, even if he were cognizant of what is going on, which he is not. He is in trance. Could he produce the appropriate dress or the appropriate action when neither he nor his wife know who are coming or where they may seat themselves? Putting on one side for the moment the precautions we take by searching the cabinet and the premises, how can we account for the unerring certainty with which the proper form, dress, and movements are manifested to each member of the circle? To me, this is one of the chief proofs of the genuineness of the Johnsons. The expense, and the difficulty of finding the histrionic capacity in the neighborhood, forbid such an explanation of the supernormal phenomena that take place at these séances. The expense alone would prohibit such an idea, for it could be of no interest to the mediums if three-quarters of their takings were swallowed up in the payments of confederates and properties. I am entirely in agreement with what Mr. Yarian says. Such deception would not pay. If an average of the whole year is taken, the Johnsons cannot be making more than $10 a week. A confederate would expect at least half a dollar for a séance, and the dresses could not be obtained for any trifling sum. I have, below, given reasons for my belief that there are no confederates. 59, but to return to this particular séance. Johnson was outside the cabinet for at least half the time that the materializations appeared. The gait and movement of the arms of Cleopatra were the same as on the previous occasion. Jeannie, a Scotch girl, came out on both occasions, dressed in plaid. One of the most interesting incidents in the séance was the reappearance, after many months, of Martha, an old maid of the Yarians, in proper servant's dress, apron, bib, and so forth. Mrs. Yarian had told me about her the day before. The girl admitted that this was what enabled her to manifest. One of the prettiest sights was to see a little Indian girl called Oviola, below medium height, skip out into the circle. Of course, I did not know her or Martha, but they were both clearly recognized by the other members of the circle. During this séance I saw several forms dematerialize, two or three outside the cabinet. One male form did it deliberately, to show me how it was accomplished, and Cleopatra dematerialized from feet upwards. The next morning, Sunday, January 17, I went to Chicago, and returned to Toledo on January 24. On Monday, January 25, 1909, I sat with Mrs. Johnson alone in the cabinet, 2 to 2.45 p.m. She was not well, having been up all night nursing a grandson who was dangerously ill. 60, there was one attempt at etherealization by my father. Viola came first to talk to Uncle Moore. All the spirits use the trumpet, except Crocho, or Crooked Stick, an Indian girl, who spoke through Mrs. Johnson. My father and mother spoke, and Viola. My father said, "W, don't worry about that question of identity. Proofs will come when you are least thinking of them." This was an allusion to my attempting to identify Iola, at the Bang Sisters, a few days before, by a series of 23 written questions, only some of which were answered. "I was not thinking of this at the time," Iola said. "We shall get on better now that you have lost your doubts." After seeing a certain picture precipitated at the Bangs, I had given up all doubt as to her identity. When I asked Iola if my picture had started from Chicago, she said, "It is all right, when you get it you will be pleased. I have prepared a surprise for you." It had been settled at Chicago that one of my pictures should be sent to me at Toledo. It arrived on the Wednesday, January 27th. When I examined it, I found an inscription in one corner. There was no writing on it when I left Chicago. This is a remarkable incident. Remember, I only left Chicago on Sunday, the day previous to the sitting with Mrs. Johnson. Iola, who spoke without trumpet, also said, "Next seance I will come first, when the power is strongest." It was during this cabinet sitting that Hypatia first manifested to me. She had come to my friend Mr. H. C. Hodges, at Detroit, several times, and given her history, every detail of which was found to be correct. I presume that our conversation about her a fortnight before was the means of her making herself known to me. Croce controlled Mrs. Johnson at the end of the sitting, and spoke for quite 5 minutes through her mouth. Edna the nun spoke to me in the direct voice without using the trumpet. Viola, when she came a second time, said, "Iola says that when the picture comes to you, watch the eye, it will follow you about." This is curious. It does happen in one full-face picture precipitated in the presence of the Bangs sisters. Both eyes follow the observer all over the room. But the picture then expected to arrive at Toledo was a profile, and nothing of the sort takes place. Mrs. Johnson held my hands most of the time, obviously to show she was not touching the trumpet, and sometimes put my hand to her mouth while spirits were talking, to show she had no part in the production of the voices. 61. The next time I visited the Johnsons was on January 29th, 1.50 to 3.10 p.m. when I had a materialization seance with them alone. It was an interesting experiment, and I was much surprised that it was so successful. Johnson passed into the trance state in about 10 minutes. In less than 5 minutes later, Iola rose slowly out of the floor in front of me, outside the cabinet, and passed in between the curtains, thus keeping her promise of January 25th. I went to the opening with Mrs. Johnson, who invariably accompanies a sitter, to lend additional power to the manifestations, and asked the spirit, "Did you make that inscription on the picture?" A whisper came, with the help of others. My guide then sank into the floor. Viola appeared 3 times. She came close up to me, 4 feet outside the cabinet, twice, and I was able to see her fairly well, better than I did Iola. Towards the end of the seance, while Mrs. Johnson was trying to discover the name of a man who had appeared at the opening of the cabinet, Viola sprang out of the floor 4 feet behind her, and, gliding up to her silently, passed between her and the curtain into the cabinet. Then came an etherealization of a man in silver robes. The room was darkened for this, the cover of the lamp being drawn down from within the cabinet, and the curtains drawn back. Greyfeather, who had not previously not spoken much, said that this spirit had met me before on the other side of the Great Pond, and that his name was Abdullah. I presume that this was the Abdullah of Crack's band. He salamed several times, but did not speak. The next materialization was that of Cleopatra, who emerged from the cabinet with her accustomed crown and gestures, but only 5 feet 3 inches or 5 feet 4 in height. "I account for this by want of power, owing to my being the only sitter." She said she would guard her picture, see chapter 7, and reappeared twice. Cleopatra was followed by Hypatia, who came 3 times. She gave her name, and walked, or glided, up and down the room 2 feet outside the cabinet. Her face was that of a handsome woman, with much hair, and the movements of the figure were graceful. She could not talk much. I said, "If I go to Chicago again, will you help to precipitate your portrait?" The answer was, "With great pleasure." There was nothing in the face, nor that of Cleopatra, that suggested a mortal being. I do not know why, but Mrs. Johnson was delighted at the appearance of Hypatia. Hypatia brought an old friend of mine on her 3rd appearance. I thought I knew who it was by his general appearance, possibly telepathy was at work, and asked, "Are you an English naval officer?" The head was bowed, and he twice put his hand to his forehead, indicating the disease from which he passed out. This brother officer died insane some 6 years before. I asked, "Are you happy?" The head was bowed vehemently. Both figures were clearly seen together. My father and mother materialized. In these there was no possibility of error. My father had a nose like the Iron Duke, and I saw him in good light 3 feet outside the cabinet. His prominent feature was clearly distinguishable.